Finally, Peter.
Hey, Miss P. Man, again, all of my favorite people today.
I'm not one of your favorite people.
Of course you are. Because you don't call me, you'd be quiet. I speak to you over the fence, or as we are now told, over our curtilage.
I have long conversations with my dentist.
Okay. So it's just me.
Pardon?
It's just me.
You're my next door neighbor. You can always come over and chat with me. You know that. You know that you like to bring messages to me from other people.
So how have you been doing? How have you been coping?
I like it this way. It's very quiet at night. No motorcycles going up and down the street. No racing. Like, this is Bushy Park. Peter, when you come home today, you are going to faint. They cleaned our roads.
Yeah, I saw them this morning moving down with backpacks and things.
Well, yeah, we just have one more mission, and you and I will work on that together because that bush needs to be cleared.
Did they actually remove the rubble, or did they just pile it up?
No.
They removed it.
You live on this street, and I live on this street. They don't do that stuff. Okay. They put it in bags, and they're waiting, I guess, for the garbage sanitation workers to come and pick it up.
Okay, all right.
Oh, no, it's very, very neat, and it was very well done. And you and I know it hasn't been done in over 12 years.
That's certainly something that warms my heart. As you said, the other matter that we have to talk about is a different story altogether. That's a private matter.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, government can't impact on that. Yeah.
They can if they want to. They did it for me once before, but that's when the bees were last in. Before this, when they were in before. Yeah, it'll get done. Don't worry about it.
No problem.
Peter, I believe that it's time for Lord Nelson to be removed. Not jumped in the sea, because that's too disrespectful for me. No one paid for it. That's government property, and I don't go along with that. I don't go along with destroying property. Okay, but I think he could be put in a museum, right?
Yeah.
Or be replaced with Bussa. I would really like to see Bussa in town. I really would. But I laugh because I go by and I see Lord Nelson. You can't tell what complexion he is. And I think the only thing that would miss them are the pigeons. Can't tell what complexion he is. You can't. You know, because
the problem is that we have an inscription on the bottom that tells us exactly who he is.
Well, you know, I lied to my granddaughter. Thank God she couldn't read at the time when she came here when she was 5. She's now 19. But when she came here to stay with me for 3 weeks when she was 5, we walked by it. And the taxi drivers were still out there because that's how they remember me. She looked up at me and she said, "Nanny, who's that man?" I said, "Oh, he's some famous black man." And that was the end of the story because I felt offended way back then that this statue was in the center of Barbados. Mm. So like the British man said, and I agree with him 100%, we need to have a referendum.
But Ms. P, if we have a referendum, there's no guarantee that the people who have your view or my view will win.
Oh, I know they will.
Right. No, Ms. P, you need to go online.
Young youth in this country. Peter, all they do is talk about the ruffians. The ones that they're going to go along with it. Trust me.
Ms. P, you need to go online and look at that survey that I did back in 2007, I believe it was. It was earlier than that, 2002 or 2003. It was a 1998 survey.
Out, Peter.
Sorry?
Half of those field Negroes have died out. House Negroes have died out.
You think so?
Pigeons are gone, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. It's a whole new breed. It's just that British man.
My challenge with your argument, and clearly you and I agree on this issue in terms of what should be done. What else are we going to subject to a referendum? Because my idea of governing by referenda is not representative democracy. Representative democracy is that I elect a representative to take decisions on my behalf. And I was clear in my mind that the representative that I elected, which is the same representative, well, no, you get represented by someone on the other side of the road. But
you can mention their name. You should mention their name and not say somebody on the other side of the road. That I find.
You're in Toppin's constituency. I am in Motley's constituency. Right.
That's right.
So I am saying that I was under the impression that my representative was clear in her mind that Nelson should not be there. Indeed, I believe Toppin would have been as well because he was part of the previous administration that agreed to move him. So my thing is, I don't understand what we need to have a referendum for, an expensive and costly referendum to decide on something, which the vast majority of us have already spoken to. And more importantly, we have elected a government that has entrenched itself in a position that he should not be there.
I want to tell you something, Peter, and you're a business person. Okay, even though I took the safe route and worked for government and private instead of going into my own business, okay, because I wanted a guaranteed income because I had a child to feed, I understand exactly why the onus is on the people of Barbados and not on the government of Barbados to decide whether Lord Nelson should stay or be removed and put in a museum. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I know exactly what's going on. These are tough times. You know, we're barely out of COVID-19. Our economy is like at the bottom of the barrel, you know? I mean, our prime minister has to make some serious decisions. She's leaving it up to the people, even going on that march. Well, our prime minister has had marches before because I've gone on two of them, you know? Mm-hmm. But right now, she's between a hard place and a rock.
But why?
What do you mean, why?
Who putting her in a hard place and a rock? Sorry, Miss P, you and I would disagree today. I am at a loss to understand where this rock and this hard place is. You have 90% of Barbadians behind you, spiritually, right?
We need them financially.
And then you have, but that's fine. But she has all of that. What more do you need? What more political capital or economic capital do you need to take the decision? I don't see where no rock and no hard place is. She is in the best possible environment that a prime minister could want to be in regarding an issue like this.
I disagree. And I don't blame
you. You just executed a boss program, right? Which is ultimately a facility that is borrowing money from public servants to pay them back later on. Now you execute that. Now my thing is that if you can execute that, you would tell me you can't move Nelson.
I think the onus is on
the most successful government we have had since independence. In terms of political support. I'm sorry?
Peter, why don't you have another poll? Why isn't the government hire you?
You're going to pay for it?
Do another poll.
But I don't know that it would make any sense.
I think it will.
The last poll that was done, it was commissioned by The Nation, and then I did one at the community college that was part of a program I was doing up there. I have no access to such facilities. But to me, it's a waste of money for someone to commission a poll, even though I would benefit from it. Is it a waste of money to commission a poll or not? No, because we've gone past this point of discussing public opinion. And I think the important thing is that we have committed ourselves to a path. We should follow through on it. And I ain't seeing this rock and this hard place because I ain't seeing where the hard place is and I ain't seeing where the rock. All I know is that the prime minister is driving on a road that is paved with Barbara Green. And you just tell me that the sides of the road now have been weeded, so she doesn't even have that impediment. So the road's smooth and the sides get clean up. So is Barbara Green straight through? No?
But all the cracks didn't get fixed yet.
the cracks had to be a problem.
Peter, let somebody else get on right. Because
but
I find
thanks for calling and expressing
everybody.
Your view on this, though. I'm happy to hear from you on this matter.
I'm happy to talk to you.
I think that all ideas have to contend. I would just prefer them to contend on this program and not in a wider possible format that could take us a few more years to discuss. So thanks a lot, Ms. P. It's good to hear from you in this regard. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Oh, my God.
You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Peter. This is my first time. I'm an avid listener. This is my actual first time calling in.
Welcome to the family, sir.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm in my early 40s. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll go across on the block. And have this discussion on your blog with some of my friends. You've talk politics, we talk everything. We were actually talking about Lord Nelson last night, and some of my friends were actually saying that they would pursue to get on there, when I have the march, at the game, taken down, get their piece of rope and play rugby deck and help pull it down. But I honestly, from a Belgian standpoint, culturally, historically, it's a part of our history. No matter if it was definitely an ugly time, slavery and so on. I even contemplated some of my friends, as I told them, that I would even see, at one point, I would love to see Buster down there. Buster would be so fitting right down there, right in the middle, from a colonial standpoint, slavery standpoint. He fought for, organized and fought for the abolishment of slavery. Then when he died, his followers still carried on his works, and I would definitely love to see Buster down there. But on a different note, Nelson, as I said, part of history. He is a part of history, Egypt history still. And I think the most fitting part for him, place for him, sorry, would be a museum. Not the honest truth. That's the honest truth, guys. Pure and simple. Pure and simple. As I hear somebody, all the callers mentioning, as well as you, about the conjuncted, I remember my old primary school was 30. That is now closed down now. And I just remember going up by Henry Ford, playing at Henry Ford Estate and in the gully and so on. And I remember going down there with Adrian Donovan to do PE, football, on the pastor and so on. And honestly, at the time as a kid, I remember down there, I never knew that it was to taught theology. And I just was amazed at all the fish that was in the pond down there. And it was a beautiful landscape. That's the ownership, but in retrospect, I ain't too familiar with the whole Cardinal College, is it a Belgian institution funded and so on?
No, the Codrington Estate was a plantation, like any other plantation. It's just that the owner left the estate for the advancement of religious education. So it has now become the center for training of priests.
Yep. Theology.
In theology, right, theological training. But the important point was that the estate was a slave plantation. I mean, there was a plantation where slaves were kept. My concern has always been, is it appropriate for us to elevate Codrington, especially as Codrington College is now part of the University of the West Indies? Is it important for us to maintain that association with an individual who would have maintained slaves on his plantation while being a Christian? The point is that I am not sure that we are ready for that conversation yet. So right now we are at the stage where we're discussing the Nelson statue issue. There will come a time when maybe we will be ready to have the conversation about Codrington College and Carlisle Bay. You know, this is part of our maturity and as a people.
And I believe it also will be eventually part of our history, as it already is already. And it's a norm for things to get renamed in Barbados, buildings, roads, and so on. Nothing is wrong with, to me, honestly, with passing the baton and showing that maturity in some sense. And I didn't know you could.
I think you're
so
right, sir.
Others, so much others that you could possibly pass the baton. That's my gist of it in a sense. That's the honest truth. But good day. Well.
All right. So I'm glad that you finally, you can say, plucked up the courage to call, and I hope that it's not the last time you call the program, and that we can have further conversations on matters of this nature again. I would say that I'm also 90% with you regarding this idea of us saying, you know, the museum is part of our history. Let us reflect it in that way, and let's move on to discuss and to do other things as a nation, right? Okay, sir, thank you for calling. It's good to hear from you, and hopefully you will call again soon. We take a break and come right back. Welcome back to Down the Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Remember, we run until 2 p.m. My expectation is that we should have in 7 minutes or, well, knowing the way the courts function, probably in 10 minutes or so, we should have the word from George Strong regarding the injunction that has been sought to have the elections declared null and void by the appeal court. And that is a widely anticipated judgment. So I'm hoping that I'll receive a word from my good friend Dennis Krabal, who's part of the media down there that's been keeping me informed of the developments in about 10 minutes or so. Certainly before we end the program at 2, I should be in a position to advise you whether Guyana will be going to a new government today or whether we will have a continuation of this exercise for more days as the court determines what's supposed to happen. So we'll see. Down the Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Yeah, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Well, I hope it is me that is on this time, Peter, right?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah. But what do you mean, like who?
Right. Okay. Now, I want to agree with your initial sentiments about having political capital, right? When you have a lot of political capital, you're supposed to make use of it. You should not abuse or waste it. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, the government could definitely use that power it has to get rid of Lord Nelson. I do not agree with the delay that Ms. Smalley is alluding to, by some doc or the other. You could remove Nelson and you can stack it somewhere till they come to a conclusion as to what they are going to do with it. There was another time when I thought there was a lot of political capital that went wasted too. That's during the time of Owen Arthur, when he did not reform the public service. And that was, he had an excellent opportunity to do that, and that's why we were left with a lot of problems hanging on to today. You got any comments thus far?
No, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah.
Right. So,
we're going again.
All right. Number two, in the news item just now, I see that there's a retraction. I don't know if it's a retraction, but I was thinking so about John King regarding what he said about the statue. But what John King did not refer to in that news item was that he said, forgive Lord Nelson. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of a reason why Lord Nelson should be forgiven. And this is what I read to the people on the Facebook and in the various chats. So he needs to respond to that because he did not respond to that to that either. The other point, by the way, did you hear from Mark Williams today?
Not yet. He hasn't called yet.
Well, I got to get him before Mark Williams because Mark Williams made a statement, and I referred to it last week, right? And I would like him to retract the statement. I repudiate this statement, and that is that he was a member of the Barbados Labour Party team when it had its theme, The Great Combination. He was not a member then. And I would like him, because he said so a couple of weeks ago, to come on the air and clear that. That is not correct. The Great Combination team existed at the time when Tom Adams was the Prime Minister. Mm. Had Billy Miller and that big-time group, they like Bradshaw. And then that was the Great Combination. Mm. Mark Williams had nothing to do with that. Mark Williams was a one-term parliamentarian.
Oh, you are poo-poo, my friend's contribution.
Hey, poo-poo, your combination, but he cannot come on the radio.
But, so is it not possible that there can be two great combinations?
There was never two, because once he was...
If you would say that was the great combination, what would you call this current arrangement with Prime Minister Motley?
No,
the great assassination?
No.
The political assassination?
No. What I'm saying is that they had their own teams, you know. They had their own teams. Yeah. They made their teams. And I'm saying that was the team at the time. Mm. So
I understand. And I know that I've heard it associated more with Tom and Bree. Because it was bridging the gap between Bree's experience and Tom's, you know, savvy. But I think what Uncle Mark may have been saying is that it was another great combination. as opposed to, so he was part of a great combination and great combination.
No, no, it could not have been either, because that was the period where when Alpha had a long coat tail. A long coat tail means there's no combination, there's a person and there's some followers.
I am trying effortlessly to defend Mark, but doesn't seem to be working.
It's indefensible. It can't help you. He was on that court till the minute they went off a shake, he'd off, back off and won. One single term, he'd out scrambling from then till now.
Yeah.
Then defend it when he come here next time. Mm. No, I can go on to one that I can excite you more. This is the one with Verla, the Pisa, right? Hello?
I'm listening, sir, yeah.
Right. Mm. It is the agitation by Verla de Pisa, people like Verla de Pisa, as well as Caswell Franklin, that caused the boss to roll out in the way it is today. Because it's only now that I learned today on your program, that actually, if you do not interfere with the boss, your salary will not be interfered with. In other words, if you just throw away the
boss. If you don't interfere with the boss don't interfere with you.
The boss don't interfere with you. And okay. I think that's
reasonable.
That's good, but that is a result of the Pisa's persistent complaints and agitation, as well as Caswell. Frankly, it is unfortunate that you got Tony Moore and the other people there who are the union reps or members or leaders who couldn't get that transaction happen. They couldn't get that effected, but yet still, Verla de Pisa outside, as well as Caswell Franklin, was able to get that to occur. Mm. Now, let us look at the, because you're always begging about the selection of candidates for the Democratic
Party. But I want to comment on what you just said. Because it's in fairness to you, the first time I ever heard Prime Minister Motley talking about the boss, she said that persons who want to opt out have the option to opt out. No, she wasn't specific regarding the mechanism for opting out. But she said, if you opt out, you will still be paid, and that the bond will be sold to someone else.
Right.
So while you're saying it is because of the insistence of Verla and Caswell, I don't think that is fair, because from the first time she spoke of it, she said, you know, if you had no option, if you had no interest in it, you will be paid, and the bonds will be sold on the other market.
But that involved the civil servants, they have to do something, but no, you don't have to do anything. So it's a bit different.
No. Right, so what's the other point now?
I could done with the boss, right? But since you mentioned, let me just make this one little point. What was wrong, what is wrong with offering the civil servants land to purchase instead of bonds? What is wrong with that concept?
Land to purchase instead of the bond?
Yeah, instead of they putting the money towards a bond.
It's messier.
No, hold on, get messy.
Because real estate is always messier.
Not really, because what is it about real estate?
I can give you a bond with a 5% maturity, and I can give you a piece of paper that represents that bond, and you just, you know, mature it. I can give you one for $1,200 one month. Next month, I can give you 12 more. I can give you 6, whatever. The challenge is that when you're buying land, how do you decide? You allocate a square foot per month?
No.
Who's going to pay the legal fees? Who's going to pay the commission charges?
The owner of the land is going to pay as usual. Because remember, a lot of the civil servants are trying to buy land on their own. Anyhow, when they're going through the process. So all you do is you bring it here. And you include many more people. Because a lot of people want land and can't get land. Certainly the national housing, you hardly can get a piece of lot from there. But through the government, you'll be guaranteed all civil servants, 20,000 of them, get each of them a small plot of land and let them pay. And the thing about it, right, is at the end of the four-year period that they have, the government don't have to look to repair them, because the government still got the fine money plus 5% at top of it to repair all of those people who would have got the money.
It sounds good in theory, but I'm just trying to understand how we're going to acquire this land over time and, you know, how that's going to work.
We got a lot of time for your hand. We ain't busy. We're so hard about it. You got.
But I tell you, if I put in $1,200 one month, and then you decide I ain't done with that, so you can give me what, a square foot of land?
No, you're not putting in $1,200. How much money is taking out your salary per month?
I don't know how much it is. Let's say they're taking out $500.
10% of your money.
Take out $500. Then what are you gonna do with me? Yeah.
Right. So that goes towards your land. meantime, you know you're getting land, so you could be working out your location and your legal fees and everything along the way.
Man, that sounds really complicated.
You got years to deal with it.
Let's say that I decided I'm done with that.
But if you decide you're doing with the bond, what are you doing?
But then you're going to sell back the land, or who's going to pay the commission charges and the transfer taxes?
If you decide you finish with the land, another person there is willing to get the land, so the land is all.
Who paying the transfer taxes?
Well, it doesn't matter, because if you want land so desperately, you would get land, because remember, you're not selling the people the land at the full value either, you know. The same way the people in Coverley get their land for let's get another. The civil service could get land very reasonable too. I don't know who would want to back a spot of land that value $60,000.
Somebody is here saying that they agree with me that there's not going to be enough land and that it's going to get messy. Look, sometime ago, the UK government started a nice project which I like. So first-time homeowners that fit the economic bar.
Right.
They say, I am buying a house, and the house costs $100,000, and government says, you find 50, I will put 50.
Good.
So government owns 50% of your house. You borrow your 50, you pay interest on your 50 at the bank, and government puts the other 50, and you're living in your house comfortably.
The moment
that you decide you want to sell the house is valued. And if that house is valued at $200,000, then government's 50 becomes 100, and your 50
becomes
100. The sale price is passed on to you. You reflect that, and then you move on. If you decide not to sell the house, government maintains interest in your house for life.
But that's a very good thing.
It's a nice system.
I agree.
And it is not messy.
Right. I agree with that. But I just got the idea that it should be land instead of a bond.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that.
Let me say something about it. Let me ask you this question. If the Barbados dollar devalue, what is going to be the value of the bond at that point in time? The money that you put in now, you're going to lose your money.
Yeah, but we're doing this to insure. But if the Barbados dollar devalue, you have the money on the bank, is the same thing?
No, you're not talking about money. You're talking about money in the land.
And I got you. And I'm saying that right now is not an option. We have to find creative options of helping people to own property. And that's one of the ones that has always fascinated me. It's almost like a rent to own, you know. And if you decide that you want to rent a unit for the rest of your life, then that's perfectly fine too.
It can be refined, right?
So
the last point now, this is with the Democratic Labour Party, right? No, I hear you are advising the Democratic Labour Party don't bring back none of the old team. Mm. Patrick King and Tallboy and all of that. They got no moral authority, something like that. Now tell me something. Do you believe that if they bring back those old members, that they will not win seats, none of them will win seats? You believe so?
They might win seats.
Because let me tell you this.
They might win seats.
Your opponent don't give you good advice. That's the first thing. You go into war with a man, you don't give good advice how to win the war. You just give advice how to lose. So once I hear you telling people, this isn't necessarily coming from you, because I don't know what side of defense you are on. So I deal with the BLP paramours, and I'm saying to them that they are saying, look, I be giving you good advice. Don't bring back any of the old people. But that advice has to be bad advice, because you don't give your opponent
Let me tell you why I say that, right? Someone Kimar just wrote me and told me that the name of Arthur's team was called the Team for the Times. So he was not part of the Great Combination, but he was part of the Team for the Times.
Right? He was on the fringes of that
team. No, the fringes. He was on the team for the Times. So don't take pot shots at Uncle Mark.
He was not a great combination,
but he was part of a Team for the Times. Anyhow, this isn't about that.
Yes,
we're talking about issues here now regarding the team. This team, the DLP team.
DLP team, yes.
I am not saying, and I have never said, that if those guys come back, that they're not going to win.
Yeah.
Because I think I've gone on record as saying, I believe that if Lashes came back in St. Michael North, he would probably win that seat fairly easily. I think that if Chris came back in Northwest, again, he may win it fairly easily, assuming that his strategies were the same.
Right.
St. John is a different story because St. John was a different candidate. But there are some seats, and two of those are the seats that I have identified as sensitive. What I have said is that the long-term interest of the Democratic Labour Party is that they move on from that. Because if Chris comes back, and Lashes comes back, or whoever else comes back, the conversation that will take place in the election is defined based on the old Democratic Labour Party. And worse yet, if either of them win seats in Parliament, that conversation will continue as though it was 2018. And that conversation about what their sins were when they were in office will start up. Every time they open their mouth, somebody has slapped them down. Well, you know when you was in government, because that was the worst government in the history of this country. So I am not suggesting that as a win or loss situation. I am saying that if the Democratic Labour Party wants to be able to turn a new page, if it wants to forge ahead with a new plan, a new principle, new philosophies, and to forget a lot of the sins of the past, the best thing if it wants to move on, is to take a shower and put on fresh clothes.
But let me tell
in
you
a sense, taking a club and putting back on the same clothes.
The worst thing.
Agree?
I fully agree with you. Listen.
So what, you would take a shower and then put back on nasty clothes?
No.
Not that them is nasty clothes, but you get my point?
I understand your analogy.
Put on fresh clothes.
That's for sure. I understand your analogy.
And I ain't even saying wash the clothes and hang them out on the line. I say buy fresh clothes and put on.
That's if you're dirty in the first place. But I ain't come to no conclusion the body was dirty. But let me say this.
But you saying that, you serious?
But
you don't believe that the vast majority of Barbadians have a slightly different opinion?
I just don't want to talk when I talk. But I don't believe it. Half a woman is be talking. But this is the times with the BLP, so you got to give it the glory, right? Mm. But I believe half of the things you are talking. Because for example, you all said that things were so bad in Barbados. Another day, the people were dead. And the day after, they get sewage tax. They get garbage tax. They get water went up. Light went up. Food went up. And you know what the people say? We can handle it.
And SRL went off. NSRL went off and salaries went up.
Listen, NSRL went off for the rich people.
It went off and salaries went up.
It didn't. No, not for the people in Barbados.
The first thing that they did was that they did a salary increase, take off the NSRL, and then the other things went on.
No, listen. The people at the gas station got a salary increase of 5%.
All right, we're going to have to take a break. We have, I think it's breaking news, so just stick a pin. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. So that's a bit of tragic news. Of course, the latest will keep you informed as the evening progresses or the afternoon progresses. I'm told that the court has already sat in Guyana. The judgment is not yet been revealed, but they've started the process of reading the judgment, and I will keep you informed if this is concluded before 2 p.m. If their lordships come to a conclusion before 2 p.m., I'll let you know. All right. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. Peter, am I on?
You are. Yes, you are. Welcome to the program, sir.
Well, thank you. This is the second time for 15 years that I called.
Second time?
Yeah, because I like to listen, but I have to call because I heard a young lady that very passionate, and she was saying how everybody owns prominent businesses in Barbados except Barbadians.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right, let me, sorry to interrupt you, sir, but I just wanted to give a quick update. Justice Rishi Prasad has just concluded his statement in Guyana Court of Appeal, and he's indicated that in his opinion, the court has no jurisdiction in the matter, and that, of course, the application should be dismissed. There are three judges. All three of them will give separate decisions. So the second judge has started to read his conclusion as well, and he will determine if at the second judge's conclusion, he also agrees that there's no jurisdiction, then the matter is more or less settled. Yes, sir, go right ahead. You were concerned about her suggestion about black people and ownership of land?
Yeah, not only land, but businesses and things like that. I don't think that, because even Indians will come in here and with a suitcase and eventually they have businesses. But I think that nobody really stop us. I think that we as black people, I'm a black man, that we should be prepared to take a risk and open businesses and not just be happy with a house, a car, and money in the bank. If you want to, and not only here, I lived in England, I lived in America, I lived in Canada, and I realized that there were black people going to those places for years, and they have no economic power, and it's because we don't believe in going into businesses. We don't want to take the chance because we might lose our money. So I don't think anybody stops us. Obviously, you're going to say we have a hard time getting the finance in the first place. Sometimes that is it, but I don't think we support each other enough. And that's one thing that, because you probably told her that there were some other things that you should address, but I think that's one.
My personal feeling on that, I don't know, you want me to comment now or later?
Yeah, you comment. Right.
No, my personal feeling on that is that it's not 100% true. I really wanted to encourage the young lady to speak and to put her position on the table, so I didn't really engage because I thought that would be distracting. But I mean, when I think about it, there are so many black-owned businesses in Barbados that are really quite successful, and I think there's a myth that black business does not do well. Like I was saying to someone last week, Annie Wilson, one of the best-known black businesses in Barbados, and since Annie Wilson, there have been others who quietly do business and make good money. And people claim, that no one knows and no one, has called them unsuccessful. But not that I really want to go ahead and identify people, but there are a lot of tremendously successful black-owned businesses in Barbados that they make their money from us. And that to me is a reality that we can't forget. I think that we often assume it not to be the case, but it is definitely not the case that there are a lot of black-owned businesses in Barbados that own substantial capital.
So how come that we don't have any financial power, like economic power?
But we do. I mean, one of the best or the most lucrative financial institutions is Capital Finance, which is essentially all the credit unions. So who the credit union money is black people.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
But for some reason, we assume this not to be the case. And you know the individuals who are in management in these. When you go into these institutions to borrow money, you don't see white people.
No.
Right? When I went to negotiate my mortgage with Scotiabank, I never encountered any. I never see white people in management at Scotiabank yet. I met a guy who told me he was one of the directors at one stage, and he was white. But that was not in the course of banking business. That was just at a social event somewhere. But to say that white people control Barbados economically, I think is a bit of an overstatement, no.
It's a myth?
It's a myth.
But, I had to go to borrow money one or two times, and I had a little bit of problems. I did get the money.
From white people?
No. I told the guy that I would go home and I got a white skin that I just put in.
That's but you it. Feel that would have made a difference? Could he black like you?
But listen, I told him when I was having the problem that I have a white skin that I could go home and pretend I was getting money right away.
And what did he say?
He asked me if he got a minute. I said yes, and I got the money right away. Hmm. But anyway.
I don't think that that's the reason that you got the money. I think the reason you got the money was because he found somewhere to qualify. Sir, I have seen, I've heard this argument all the time, but as I said, I am struggling to find out who are these white bank managers and loans officers that prevent black people from being able to raise capital.
But that's what I hear all the time.
But you hear it, but it's not true because you can't find them in the banks. So you go in the bank, I challenge you, go to your bank now and say, we're the white people. Ask for the white people. You ain't going to see them.
No, they're in there.
They're in there, right? So if they're in there, then where's the problem?
The control from the top, then you don't see them.
And worse yet, you leave there and you go into one of these finance companies that sell borrow money to sell cars and whatnot. You ain't gonna find any white people neither.
But listen, I'm not knocking. Listen, I'm on your side. But what I'm saying,
I understand.
I knew years that the 1960s when I used to see them.
But that was then.
Yeah.
Things different now.
Yeah, but what I'm saying though, you bring back to my point. There's a man that called me 2 or 3 days and said that black people should not spend their money with white people. And I know that this country depends on tourism. I know that about 12% tourists that come here is black people. Or maybe 15, but I know the others are white people from all over the world. So I know that we depend on these white people to drive a nice car and develop, and for a standard living, we depend on these because we depend on tourism. This COVID-19 has hit tourism and everything is dead. We are now living on IMF money. I heard a guy say that we have a lot of political capital. I don't think IMF money was lent to us to pull down Nelson. Yeah. I don't think so.
Listen to this comment that somebody just said. Peter, I would like to clarify to some of the listeners that doctors, lawyers, accountants, engineers, architects are all black people who have successful businesses. Businesses are not only the supermarkets and the retail shops. Don't mind a lot of them belong to black people too. Some people don't seem to understand that. Pharmacies are another type of business that I can reference as well, and they're all predominantly owned by black people. Then another person says, Peter, I'm perplexed that you think the ethnicity of bankers determines the residence of economic power in a country. Maybe I have not, but the point is that is the residence of economic country, or is the suggestion being made that this is determined based on race? I think it not. But if, however, you're of that opinion, then it's difficult to justify it based on the evidence that's before you.
You mean me?
No. I'm just reading something that someone has said, you know, regarding the whole thing, that the banking system has emerged and has come a long way. And then another point, which I didn't remember, is that there are a lot of black people in Barbados that got money sitting down in banks that they could invest.
That's why you said that you have a big house and a lot of money, but you got to invest in business. That's why.
And we're talking about boss, but the point is that they won't take it out of the bank and use it for the boss. They're happier leaving it in the bank and paying the bank to hold it.
Listen, the boss had a lot of this COVID-19, and that boss brought a lot of people from the dead. I heard a lot of people that was dead came and opposing it. You know the lady who was the Minister of International, what is it, Maxine? She came out of, and she was opposing it 3 times. The guy who said he's a taxi driver, he opposed it, and then he said, but it looked like it's fine, because now that it's fine, they're all agreeing with it, or really can't do any better. I think that they have an opinion on it, it's okay, but I think it should be civil servants to decide if they want it or not.
Okay.
And one more thing I want to put in with the girl, the young person that, you know, I think there's racism all over the world, because I was in England, there was racism. I went to Canada, there was racism. I was in America, there was racism. I think there's racism in Germany, there's racism in India, there's racism in China. I think racism, as long as there's racism, there can be racism.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can get rid of it, but I don't think you should use it again as a hit against each other. Mm-hmm. But I think even in the Bible, there was racism.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we'll ever get rid of racism. So good luck to those who think they'll get rid of it.
Well, I believe that we can live in a post-racist or post-racial society. I do believe that we can, and I think that we can get there. But then, I guess I have a slightly biased perspective based on my own experiences. But I think that we can get there. All right, sir, thank you for calling. I do hope that your third time in 15 years will be Friday when I'm on the radio again, because I'd love to chat with you. It was good exchanging views and opinions. 54 minutes past the hour of one. Good afternoon. 54 minutes past the hour of one. Good afternoon. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Let's talk, Nelson.
Yeah, this is the last minute, man, boy. We'd love to call at this hour.
Peter.
And then we'll have a long, involved conversation.
Peter, you know, we'll know for at least an hour and a half. Okay.
All right. Okay.
Anyhow, now I hear this thing that we say we have debates or we have conversations, and I'm like at a loss, because I don't think this is what we are talking. We have rum shop talk. We don't have serious conversations that at the end of a conversation or a debate we come to a specific conclusion based on logic and based on facts. We have to ask ourselves certain questions about Nelson. One, is he a hero of Barbados? Yes or no?
Clearly not.
The answer is no. Mm-hmm. Therefore, he does not belong in Hero Square. So that's simple as that. This don't need.
Do we need a referendum for that?
No, you don't. Not for that.
Do we need a broader national discussion for that?
The question is, but just a second. Hold on. I'm saying we need to have discussions, yes. But now, once we've established he's not a hero of Barbados, now what do we establish? Is he culturally significant to Barbados? Well, again, the answer to me is no. He didn't like black people. He believed in the continuation of slavery. He was very, very much for it. And he made his views clear on that. And he thought that Barbados was a nasty little place. So therefore, culturally, he's not relevant to Barbados either. No. Mm-hmm. Historically, does he have historical importance? Yes. because he is a remnant of the British Empire. It explains certain aspects of how would Britain see him, all that sort of stuff, and people will come to visit him or whatever. So historically, he has relevance. And therefore, where do you place things of history? You need to place them in a museum. Okay? So therefore, to me, that is pure logic. It's not very complex. Right? This endless debate about it.
Mm.
Now, I have said I believe that he should be relocated to the Pierhead and a museum of sorts built around that there. Right? Whether it be a maritime museum incorporating the screw dock or whatever. Because that, to me, and you could put him in a position where he's now looking out to sea, endlessly looking out to sea. Okay? And people could then visit him there if they want. But the bigger conversation that we need to have in Barbados is the one about slavery. Hello?
I'm listening to you, sir.
Because we do...
I'm listening and watching the clock. It's 57 minutes past one, so I want you to finish before... So go ahead.
We have to have the conversation about slavery. Because what we have done in Barbados is ignore the fact that slavery is a major part of our heritage. And the questions and the conversations that need to be had with respect to slavery is what needs to happen. We need to have that conversation. And I have said the most successful thing that's happened with the Prime Minister's ambitions for this year was that she intended to have conversations with the people, moving through parish by parish, and sitting down and listening to people and having conversations with them. And I think that has to be renewed. I think that is something that we need to continue in Barbados, the Prime Minister having these conversations with the people. I don't like this aspect of consultation because it gives me the idea that, okay, you've made up your mind about doing something, and then you're just more or less going to get people to, you tell them this is what we're doing, and then they can follow on or whatever, and you call it consultation.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have those sort of things. I don't understand also how we call things debate. Oh, we're going to have a debate in the parliament. You can't. How can you have a debate when there's no third party, independent third party, or no ability for one side, whether it be pro or nay, to win? Because when something's presented in the parliament, it's presented by government, and they win.